This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. And are you looking for your next investment opportunity? Of course you are. Interactive Brokers' global analyst tool helps you uncover hidden opportunities in the global stock market. With its unique features like the World Data Screener, you can precisely pinpoint undervalued stocks by comparing prices and financial metrics of global stocks all in the same currency. Plus, the World Map Screener allows you to quickly find stocks that meet your specific financial criteria across the universe of global equities. Imagine the advantages that you have of making better investment decisions with powerful tools right at your fingertips. Don't miss out on the next great investment. You definitely don't want to do that. Interactive Brokers clients in over 200 countries and territories trade stocks, options, futures, currencies, bonds, and funds, and more on more than 150 global markets from a single unified platform. You know, the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. So experience the power of IBKR Global Analyst for free today at IBKR.com/Global Analyst. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The carry trade, well, it blew up, but now it's fully resolved. Economic indicators are bad, but that's good news for markets. And under the radar, layoffs are happening. Our guest today, Anthony Scaramucci, founder of Skybridge Capital. All this and much more on episode number 882 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Oh, man, what a wild ride. It's pretty funny, to be honest, if you think about what's gone on over the last week. I mean, the big is back. The mega caps are roaring ahead again. And I got to tell you, what you're hearing on TV and regular business channels, way off. I mean, total malarkey. It's according to me, at least, Andrew Horowitz and president of Horowitz Company, also host of The Disciplined Investor, going on... I don't even know how many years it is now. It's 17 years or so, and also co-host of DH Unplugged. You know, it's not right now about market valuations or even AI or even tech. I don't think so. In fact, no. If you look carefully, it's about liquidity and funding. You know, you remember what happened during times like COVID. Why is it that markets went up? Was it that... Well, rates were down so low. Well, yeah, rates were important. But also borrowing was easy. There was an influx of cash into the markets. That caused an amazing amount through stimulus, direct stimulus, by the way, an amazing amount of opportunities to just grab money and just, well, who cares? It becomes meaningless at that point. And that's why people just spent it on all sorts of things. That's why valuations go up so dramatically. That's why people would pay 85, 90, 100, 500 times earnings because they figured, you know what? It's unlimited. We'll keep getting money. We'll keep spending it. Who cares? And you know what? It's very cheap. We'll get something eventually. The fact of the matter is what we're seeing right now, there is some similarities to that. Yes, we know there's still stimulus in the system due to the Inflation Reduction Act, some of the other money that's sloshing around from years and years of excess stimulus. Rates, okay, we could say that that is cutting off some supply in the area of availability of funds or desirability of funds when we look at it that way. Okay, I'll go with that at the same time. But what we're looking at right now, it's all about, again, liquidity and funding. And what we know about that and how we could see that so clearly is because we can watch as plain as day through what's happening with the yen and the US dollar. You could see that the preferred place that institutions, and for that matter, sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, things like that, would utilize, and where they grabbed their money from was borrowing the yen and buying the U.S. dollar or buying other assets, right? They'd convert the yen into the U.S. dollar. The trade was kind of like, oh, you keep making money on it. It was like putting money, taking money out of a bank for free. Well, less than free to get money back on it. And then what would happen is, it was a reverse of a loan, in other words. And what would happen is you'd buy risk assets with it without any worry that things were going to happen. And then all of a sudden, kapooey, kablam, speaking in Batman terms, what happened was that we saw the blow up 1 week ago, for goodness sakes, a little over 1 week ago. It went from 160 to 140 in like a couple of days. And that really caused a lot of disruption in the markets. And really, we understand the structural inefficiencies and the problems that are underlying what's going on in the markets right now were on plain display right then and there. And if you looked at what happened with the Japanese markets on a regular basis, and you see at 8 p.m. at night, when the Japanese markets open, the futures kind of really reopen for full trading. Immediately, the first thing on the bell at 8 o'clock that happens is the Japanese yen goes down, the dollar goes up, and this has been going on for years. In fact, you could look at what happens at futures. They go up too. The first thing that you see over the past years is the U.S. dollar is bought, the yen is sold. That's the carry trade, and that's what you have. Hold that point. Put that aside for just a second, and we'll talk about the next point. Because we're going to look at what happened in economics, not only last week, but the last few weeks. And at this point, really, I think we all agree that a rate cut is priced in, or cuts priced into the markets through the end of the year, whether they happen or not. That's not the point. Who cares? It's what's priced in, the expectation of that. And even if they're not going to happen, the carrot dangles very boldly in front of investors, and we'll get some in the future, maybe 3 months later. But it's going to happen. We know it. At least that's what we're told. And as the economics gets softer, and at first yields on bonds went down, that caused all sorts of problems. That was also linked to the U.S. dollar. That was the first crack that we saw in this carry trade with the yen. And that's why everybody said, oh my God, we're getting all these margin calls, all these problems. Sell anything you have, bring up cash. And what they did was they essentially allowed for money to be created to, once again, create liquidity in the system. So this week we saw a bunch of soft inflation data, the PPI, the CPI, not soft, but softer. Manufacturing data was soft, but the retail sales came in really hotter than expected. And the translation from the media is that here we are. We are in a soft landing. That's the probability right now. No recession. And everybody is off to the races saying, well, what I'm supposed to do in that scenario is buy stocks because the Fed is going to reduce rates. We're not going to have a problem with earnings because when you think of recessions, you think of earnings, right? Earnings will slow down. Companies will start laying off people. And then all of a sudden we see this major amount of softness in the economy. And that just is a self-fulfilling prophecy that causes all sorts of undue harm on the financial system. But no, this week, not happening. Retail sales were the one thing this week that came in. Remember, last week, on the week before, on Thursday, somehow markets reacted very favorably on a Thursday again to soft initial claims numbers. Bizarre. Initial claims, who cares? On a week-to-week basis. You got to look at this over a long period of time. But yet markets reacted so violently to the upside. Because once again, the same thing is going on. The dollar actually moved higher. Yen came down. Carry trade on in full force. Yields actually came up on all these prints. All this soft manufacturing data. But yet everybody's pretty excited about, well, maybe they won't do a lot of significant damage to the economy here because we're going to have rate cuts and we're not going to have a recession. Woohoo! Now, the combination of all this data was really confusing, to be honest with you, but it did support a higher USD. Again, US dollar. once again, just to get back to the same point over and over again, that just benefits the carry trade. In other words, the lending will continue and we can buy the crap out of risk assets. That's what's going on. That's the real story. Don't let anybody fool you about what's going on. And if you want to really know and you want to look and see, is this guy Horowitz full of crap? What I want you to do is take a monthly or a weekly chart since the end of 2022 or from the beginning of 2023 and look at the relationship of the USD to the yen, and you'll notice that works in lockstep with the markets. The liquidity that the markets are always searching for has been found. It has been rediscovered. We left stimulus, and here we are with the yen. And one thing we also know is that liquidity will regularly seep its way into risk assets over time. Why not? I mean, if we can find a way to get a very cheap money or something that's a layup on a lending standpoint, why not buy risk assets and try to do a multiplier factor and parlay your bets into something very significant? That's exactly what's happening. Now, at the same time, we saw reports from Cisco and a few other companies. What's interesting is we're starting to see some layoffs. And one of the things they talked about many times, and a lot of times with my constituents and some people that I know that have a lot of good insights into markets, is that now what's happening is tech needs to find the next way of keeping their earnings up. Because what they had was this magical way of turning money from the balance sheet into income by funneling it through other companies that were startups that would need to utilize their, whether it was AWS, whether it was Google, whether it was Azure through Microsoft, they needed to use these platforms to get a leg up. And these startups were giving all sorts of money, but also said, you know what? You're going to have to push this back to us and utilize our platforms for your process. And by doing so, allowed for this really interesting maneuver of moving money off of the balance sheets and turning it into income. As that may not be playing out as well or as much as that was going on, and as interest rates came down a little bit, making it cheaper for those companies to go elsewhere and borrow, what happened is that the next stage of what tech, the big boys, are going to do is you're going to see layoffs happening, which goes against the idea of like, wait, I thought everything was just peaches and cream and hunky-dory. That's what's going on. That's the real story. Again, don't let anybody fool you otherwise. And what they're talking about on TV is just the company byline, pure BS about just only about the Fed. It's priced in already, I believe, at 100% of what is going to happen, and markets have that belief. To think that we just are going to be working this all out through the idea that it's all about the Fed and rates is preposterous. Preposterous. All right, next week, we're talking commodities with the one and only Carly Garner. So I want you to stay tuned for that. Now, this week, well, we're going to get right to our guest. Let's get it on. Our guest, the founder and managing partner of SkyBridge. It's a global alternative investment fund. And he's also founder and chairman of SALT, a global thought leadership forum and venture studio. And prior to founding SkyBridge in 2005, he co-founded investment partnership Oscar Capital Management, which he sold to Neuberger and Berman in a number of years later. Earlier, he worked in private wealth management at Goldman Sachs and Company. In 2022, he was ranked number 47 in Cointelegraph's top 100 influencers in crypto. In 2016, he was ranked 85 in Worth Magazine's Power 100. The 100 most powerful people in the global finance. Anyway, we know him well. He's got a great podcast called Open Book. Let's bring him on right now. And as promised, our guest today is Anthony Scaramucci. We're going to get right into this discussion. We have a hot timestamp to get through. So, Anthony, how are you?
You know, I'm doing terrific. I can't complain. I'm looking at a beautiful, handsome shot of you. And which is fun. I'm going to turn my light on. Even though it's a radio podcast, I'm a vain SOB, so I'm putting the lights on here.
Everything. Yeah, look at how you're very handsome.
All right, look at
how
that.
Handsome you are. Look at that.
How's it going, Andrew? Good to see you, man.
Good. All right, so let's talk about a few things. I don't know. We could start with, let's talk about, I want to talk about your open book podcast first, because I always like to get into that. And I know that's something that's very important to you. You're an avid reader, as we know. And just a quick couple of questions on that, and maybe you can answer this. What was the most interesting author that you had on recently, number one? And number two, who do you really want to have on that you've never had on?
Okay. These are great questions. So the most interesting author for me is Daniel Silva. I think he's a brilliant spy novelist. I just had him on recently. He's out with a new book about the man called Gabriel Alon, which is the Mossad spy. This is more of a detective novel, this one, and he's just a great writer, and he's also a guy that is brilliant on a lot of different subjects. The person I would love to have on,
well, aside from me though, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, aside from you, but a person I would love to have on the book. This title of the book is A Death in Cornwall, is the latest book, but the one I would love to have on is Edmund Morris. And you say, well, who's Edmund Morris? So Edmund Morris is a biographer. And his trilogy on Teddy Roosevelt is probably some of the best biography I've ever read. That trilogy moved Nancy Reagan to make Edmund Morris the official biographer of Ronald Reagan. Oh. And I don't think he liked Ronald Reagan that much. And so he flubbed that biography. He actually added a fictional character to that biography in the Reagan story. And I think that was sort of weird. But unfortunately, I won't be able to have him on because he's passed. But he would have been the person that I would have loved, and I mean love with a capital L-O-V-E-D, to have interviewed.
Oh, great.
He died in 2019 before COVID, mm-hmm. But he wrote a great book on Edison. So a living person that I would love to have on is a woman by the name of Jill Lepore, and she wrote a book called Hidden Truths, and this is about America. She's a historian, American historian. It's not a love affair, the book. You know, it's not the America that you and I learned about in eighth grade social studies. Mm-hmm. It's the 32 million people killed in the Mexican-American War. It's the casualties of the Native Americans. It's the slavery. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly of this beautiful continent, the story of this beautiful continent. And won't make you love America any less if you have an unconditional love for America, but it'll make you understand the struggle that many different groups, many different sects have had on this continent. And perhaps it'll make you more aware of why we're still struggling.
Yeah. You grew up in the North Shore of Long Island, right?
I did. Yeah. I grew up in Port Washington. I'm from the land of the Great Gatsby.
Yep. Yep.
The Great Gatsby. I grew up on East Egg, which is Port Washington he was referring to it as the Sands Point area, which is more of the estates area, you know, but yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Comac. So you were directly north of me. So we were close. Matter of fact, my prom was in the Huntington townhouse.
No kidding. Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. Let's talk about some of the other things. Let's talk about, first I want to talk about, this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk about where we are now in terms of a country, in terms of our financials. We had the pigs, right? We had this whole thing that years ago we would scoff at, oh, you know, look at Portugal and look at Greece. Look at all this debt GDP. I want to rattle off a couple of numbers to you. The average GDP for fiscal 2023 was about $27 trillion in the U.S. That's resulting in a GDP debt to GDP ratio of 123%. Italy's at 130%. France, 98%. Germany, 59%. Japan, 265. We're the top 10 countries in the world with the highest GDP ratio or debt to GDP. What is that saying?
Well, it's not good for the United States. We're not in a danger zone yet, if we're just really being clinical. If you got to 150, 160, I would say we're in a lot of trouble. Rates will get pushed up. You'll force a debt cycle. So what a debt spiral, a debt crisis. And so let me just explain that cycle to your podcast listeners. The interest rates will have to go up so that people will put money into your debt, but then that's going to increase the expenditure, the interest expenditure for the country. And so then your tax revenues and your interest expenditure will start to match each other. And then so all of these programs, Social Security, other programs, defense spending and so forth will be on borrowed money. And then so then it becomes unsustainable. And then the dollar weakens and then you have this fissure that it'll be very hard for the country to pull out of. I don't think we'll get there because believe it or not, I actually think that there's five or six things that are happening in the economy that will prevent us from getting there. I'm happy to explain those if you want to hear them. Yeah. But the number one thing is that, the levels are high. It'd be like you coming to the doctor and saying, hey, my cholesterol levels are high. What do you want to do? Is that we got to lower your cholesterol levels. Otherwise, you can end up with triple bypass surgery 10 or 15, 20 years from now. And you certainly don't want that. So there are five or six things that are happening I think are going to help. Okay, number one, baby boomers are dying. And 20 million of them have died since the last election, meaning the last Trump winning election, 2016, 20.2 million baby boomers. That's good because baby boomers have been very reckless. They've failed as a group of political leaders. The political establishment of the Nancy Pelosi's, the Joe Biden's, the Donald Trump's, the George W. Bush's, no good for the U.S. They got past the baton of leadership from the greatest generation, and they failed the country. They racked up, and I'll just give your listeners these stats. We went from George Washington to George W. Bush, $7 trillion of deficit spending. We went from Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Joe Biden. They added $28 trillion, so now we have a $35 trillion deficit. So that's sort of ridiculous. It's unfair. It's political malpractice. And so the good news for the country is those people will be dead. They won't be able to make those decisions anymore. So that's number one. Number two, the people rising in the political classes, while there are some extremes on both sides, there's more practical people rising in the political class, and they know that we need a 10 or 15-year roadmap to solve the debt situation. And so I think those people are going to come to power and help the country. Number three, the automation, the robotics, the technology that we're onboarding as a civilization is going to help the country. It's going to increase our abundance, and that productivity is going to be felt throughout the country. It'll help our tax base, et cetera. And then the last two is whether you like Joe Biden or dislike Joe Biden, he's reshored lots of our manufacturing. He's also figured out a way to build microprocessing foundries. So we're building chips again in the U.S. This is a very big and a very important part of what we're doing, which is going to lead to greater than expected GDP growth, greater than expected productivity. And then the last thing, which I think is also important, is that, I don't know if you're allowed to say this anymore, but it's your podcast. So I'm going to say it. You know, we're the tallest midget in the world. I don't know if you're allowed to use the word midget anymore.
Oh, my God.
But we are.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Clean a shirt in the closet.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone else sucks and we suck less. And so we'll still be a safe haven for people's capital on a relative basis.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my entire I just gave you my 25-year analysis.
Now, thank you.
Hopefully less than 3 minutes.
That's unbelievable. But let's get a segue, because again, I know we have a little limited time today. Let's segue into some of the things you're doing in SkyBridge. And SkyBridge, if people don't know, we mentioned this in the opening, what SkyBridge is. And it's obviously a private or wealth management organization. It's a hedge fund. But you started SkyBridge extraordinarily well with your fund-to-funds concept. And we follow it. We know it. We've actually have clients invested in it. And you've branched out into Bitcoin. That has become a thing of yours, you know, and I don't mean that good or bad, but that's like, you know, you're known for that. You are a Bitcoin. Are you a maximalist? Can I say that?
No, you can't actually say that because I own things like Solana. I own some Ethereum. So when someone says they're a Bitcoin maximalist, they own Bitcoin. They don't own anything else. They love Bitcoin and everything else is a shit coin. Bitcoin is the only thing. So I do believe these other technologies will catch on and they will be part of the future of costless transactions going forward. And so I'm 60. Most of my contemporaries don't see it. I've been derided. I got kicked off of the Morgan Stanley platform by going into Bitcoin. Of course, since they kicked us off the platform, we've had the best performance in SkyBridge's history, which is ironic, but that's fine. You know, we bought Bitcoin at 17,000. It's 59,000 right now. It did go from 17,000 to 60 plus thousand back to 17,000 on its way to where it is today. And it's an emerging technology. And we told people, if you took a 5-year view of this, you'd do very well. I'm at the stage of my career where all of my money is in that fund. And so I'm taking that view. And I think the clients that stay with us are going to be incredibly well rewarded.
Which fund? SkyBridge or the SkyBridge
Series G? Yeah, the Series G fund. I own Steve Cohen's hedge fund. We own Paul Singer's hedge fund, Elliott. We own Izzy Englander. We have some structured credit plays on. And I would say about 40% of the fund now is digital assets, mostly Bitcoin-related assets. And we've had probably the two best years of performance in the history of SkyBridge. But that was us seeing something in the world and saying, okay, we have to move towards that thing, even though there's a lot of naysayers and even though there's a lot of haters. And so when I did that, I got derided. I got criticized. It's harder to criticize the thing now because, as you know, performance speaks.
Yes.
And everything else doesn't. And yeah. So I think I have a picture on my phone of the New York Post took a caricature of me. They had me sinking in a Bitcoin boat, and they said that I was going to turn to dust and drown in the boat. But, you know, that obviously didn't happen. They also probably picked the bottom of that cycle, you know. And so I know this is a radio podcast, but I'm showing you.
Yeah, there you go.
They say I'm sinking there.
Yeah, you are.
Of course, I had T-shirts made of that picture. And
that was like when Amazon.bomb from Barron's?
Amazon.bomb, yeah. So Jeff Bezos. Yeah. They're trying to change the world. You're trying to do something different. People don't like that. And so they'll be critical of you until they adopt what you're doing.
Let me take a quick break. We're going to come right back on because I want to talk and get into this whole crypto thing and understand a little bit about the recent sell-off that we saw and whether or not, and I know you're not shaken by this, but what we tell people, you tell people about, you know, what is the, you know, what exactly happened with that big sell-off and where is the alternative asset, the hedging? So hang on one second. And let's take a break and talk about Interactive Brokers again, because at Interactive Brokers, you know, you don't have to wait for the markets to open. What am I talking about? Well, with around-the-clock trading, you could trade over 10,000 U.S. listed stocks and ETFs, U.S. equity index options, and U.S. Treasury bonds. Because around-the-clock trading helps you stay ahead by allowing you to react instantly to market-moving news and capture more market opportunities. The flexibility that you get here allows you to trade on your timetable and invest during local market hours or, you know, whenever it's convenient for you. Open an Interactive Brokers account today and discover more trading opportunities around the clock. Because the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Learn more at ibkr.com/aroundtheclock. I want you to check this out. ibkr.com/aroundtheclock. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC. All right, Anthony Scarambucci, let's talk about crypto. Let's talk about, there was a recent sell-off, right? We saw that the yen went haywire. Things went, a couple of weeks ago, went crazy. And Bitcoin, well, crypto in general, right? Everything went kapooey. What happened to the, hey, this is a great alternative. There's a great hedge. There's a gold alternative. This is a buffer.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's some people's view. You know, people call it digital gold and they call it a store of value and all this sort of stuff. I don't say that. And I never say that. I say it could become that as it matures. So Amazon, we were talking about Amazon before the break. So Amazon, it launches in May of 1997. It has 10 episodic periods where it goes down at least 50%. One episodic period where it goes down 90%. That's the Amazon.bomb. But then it matures and it's adopted in everybody's portfolio. And now the volatility of Amazon tracks the S&P. And so Bitcoin is not anywhere near that. We are so early in the Bitcoin story, it's actually not to be believed. And so where we are right now is where Amazon was, say, 2000. You know, it's sloppy and volatile. But as Bitcoin goes from 300 million wallets to 2 billion wallets, it will stabilize and then become a store of value. But right now, it's a risk on, risk off technology asset. And it does have features of immutability, and it does have features of value storage once it's more clearly adopted. So that's my view of it. And listen, I'm willing to accept the volatility near term for the long-term results. And if you were with me when this mini crash was happening literally 72 hours ago, I would have said to you, okay, this makes sense. The value of the yen and the interest rate moves in the yen has affected the yen carry trade. And it's made it more difficult because the yen is appreciating value. It's making it more difficult for people to stay in that trade and buy Western assets using the interest rate differential in the East. And so a result of which they had to unwind that trade. Some people are blaming the fundamentals in the economy. Some people are blaming interest rates. I'm not blaming either of those things, just that the strength of the Japanese economy is way stronger than people had anticipated, which is why their stock market was going up so much and which is why it's corrected now. But if you sit here 2 years from now and you look at the situation, and if you had done nothing, and sometimes the greatest thing you can do as an investor is absolutely nothing.
And the hardest.
You will be well served. And there's a reason why dead people, the accounts of dead people at Charles Schwab do better than the accounts of living people. And so the reason for that is that the dead people don't look at the accounts.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll tell you something. I had an account at Goldman Sachs. I was 28 years old. My son was just born. I put $1,000 into this account. It was a Uniform Gift for Minors Act account. I bought them Microsoft. I bought one stock, $1,000. I misplaced the account, and Goldman misplaced it as well because it was paper back then. There wasn't a digitization movement. I had moved from the address that I had subscribed the account to. 25 years later,
oh, this is going to be nice.
Goldman Sachs contacted me and said, hey, Anthony, you worked here, yeah, what's your social security number, oh, okay, this is your account. Did you live at XYZ? I said, yes, I did. Okay, this is your son, Alexander. Yes, he is. Okay, this is your account. Do you want to move the account? You know, you no longer work here. It's not a big enough account for us to have here. Can we move it somewhere? No problem. What's in the account? Okay, so 25 years later, the $1,000 went to like $61,000.
Beautiful.
Okay, and obviously Amazon started paying a dividend, and I had clicked on that account that the dividends would go into share repurchase, which it actually did. Every time the dividend came in, they bought incremental shares of Microsoft stock for me, but I did nothing. Now, I would have sold that, okay, during the bomber years where the stock flatlined.
Yep.
I would have sold the stock. I would have gotten disinterested. I said, okay, they suck now. Let me sell the stock. But I was dead, effectively, to that account. I didn't even know it existed.
Amazing.
And so sometimes the best thing you can do as an investor is nothing.
I say sit on your hands is what I say. Walk away. Walk away, I say. Right? Go to lunch. Do something. Mm-hmm. What if you have those feelings? All right. With the last few minutes we have left, let's talk about, I guess, because you're so active and involved in the political side of things, because now as this is coming up, we're seeing you a lot more, Anthony, all over, because you obviously have some feelings and very strong feelings about some of the candidates. We know that. Some you just don't like. We know that, too. This is something that actually was a very big turn in your life. I know, probably very painful as well.
Yep.
Back of the day. Let's talk about Bitcoin. Let's talk about cryptos. Let's talk about your thoughts on if this party gets in or that party, how is that going to play?
Well, I'm about to join a call after our podcast with the Democrats to talk about crypto. And so that will be the Harris campaign, members of the Biden staff. And my goal is to make the crypto regulation bipartisan. Hopefully that will happen, and result of which we can all move on. And we want the United States to maintain its mantle of financial services leadership. But no, I think Donald Trump is a train wreck of a human being, and I think he's a very dangerous human being. And I think the stuff that he's proposing would be dangerous for the United States. And so I have been very articulate about that. Some people hate me for that. That's fine. But I will stay on it because I believe what I'm saying. And if you don't want to go by me, that's okay. What about Vice President Pence or General Milley or Secretary Esper or 40 other people that work super closely with Donald Trump and say, look, you know, you may be a Republican, you may be a conservative. This guy's neither of those two things. He's just an absolute train wreck of a human being. Excuse me. And it would be better for the Republican Party if Mr. Trump is in a category of loss in the election so that we can rebuild the party and get it back to something that's a little bit more normal, a little bit more unifying, and a little less hateful. Yep. That's me.
All right.
And so everyone says, oh, no, you're wrong. Trump stands for this. That's good. Trump stands for that. That's good. No. Trump is talking about the demolishment of your democracy. He's been very open about that. He doesn't pretend otherwise. He wants to break down NATO. He wants to basically be obsequious to dictators. I mean, he's just a weird
guy.
Good,
but okay, if he gets in, is that a good thing or bad thing for crypto and Bitcoin?
I'm sorry?
If he gets in, is it good or bad for Bitcoin?
I think it's generally long-term a bad thing. I think in the short term, it's a good thing. Because remember, he's a transactionalist, Donald Trump. So he hated crypto when he was president. They've handed him a boatload of money. He likes crypto now. I was at the event last week where he spoke, or 2 weeks ago. He's for it today until he's not for it. He's a very transactional human being. He was for Project 2025. He staffed it with 95 people. It's not polling well. Now he says, I don't even know who these people are, and I'm not for this Project 225. But he was part of it. So yeah. You know, this is the type of stuff that Trump does. And so it's very unpredictable. He's got very poor executive management skills, and he's 78 years old. He shouldn't be running for president. And people can like me for that or dislike me for that. But you know what? I love my country.
Yeah.
And I love my family. I think it's very important, having been that close to the situation, to talk about it so that people are warned. So if they want to vote for him, that's phenomenal. Okay. But I don't want to do
right.
that.
I think
it's a disaster.
We have 2 minutes. We got the three biggies, right? Three biggies that you like: Solana, Bitcoin, and ETH, right? Is the order Bitcoin, ETH, Solana for you, or what's your order?
Yeah, I would say it's Bitcoin, Solana, Ethereum. I own some Algorand still, even though it hasn't done well, but I still like that technology. I have some Avalanche, and I have a little bit of Polkadot. So those are companies I think are on the they're on the blockchain doing transactions that are very costless, low transaction fees. I think eventually one or two or possibly all of those will be picked up.
All right. Appreciate it. Anthony Scaramucci.
All right, brother. Thank you, man. It's great to be on with you.
All right. See you soon.
Lots of love, man.
Thanks. A little bit of a short show today, but that's going to wrap it up for this week. Like I said, next week, we're going to talk commodities with Carl Lee Garner, charts and things of that nature related to that, the whole universe of that. It's going to be pretty interesting, I'm sure. Thank you for joining me this week, every week on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So long for now. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.
Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates or clients.